Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're going to continue our series of draft countdowns today with the running back position. Very excited to do that with my friend Jake Vogel. Jake, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. And I don't know if you did running back last year or not, because there were definitely some guys we were very hot and cold on last year at the running back position, but I know you did a position.
I did receivers last year with you.
Oh, well, that's a good one. And just to be warned, Jake, definitely a huge Bulldogs fan. So the Georgia players have a, I think, and both Georgia backs left out of my top 10 on this list. I'm going to warn you right now about that if you had them in there somehow. All right, well, let's talk first about the Ravens situation a little bit, because the Ravens are running back a very turbulent season and offseason, starting with J.K. Dobbins' injury in week one. He did not play again. Any chance you think we see him in Baltimore again?
No, I think he's gone for sure. The move with Derrick Henry, as well as, you know, just the countless injury that he had to deal with. I just think a change of scenery is what he probably wants to. And I definitely expect that he won't be back.
Completely agree. Gus Edwards finished a fine Ravens career, the highest ever running back success rate in the 30 years that Pro Football Reference has data to tabulate that. And that's, you'll hear me occasionally refer to that. I don't have it for college running backs, unfortunately, but success rate is the percentage of times that they gain the yards minimum to keep the team on schedule based on down and distance. So on first down, you have to gain 40%. On second down, you have to gain 60%. And on third or fourth down, you have to gain 100% of the yards to go. But anyway, Gus Edwards amazingly successful in that regard. Also left the team as the highest yards per target receiver in team history with 10.1. That was only 37 targets, but 374 yards. The player, I think, will definitely miss.
I agree. I did kind of feel like it was maybe time for him to go, but I felt like he was a good player through and through during his time with the Ravens. Even last year at points, you know, he still looked like himself, but running backs do age a little bit. Maybe he wasn't the happiest with the situation necessarily down the stretch. You kind of felt, or at least I felt, like Keaton Mitchell was the running back one for sure, right before his injury took him out for the remainder of the season in the playoffs. So, you know, I think they kind of want to go in a different direction.
You know, Edwards never lost a lot of carries to anybody his entire career. That's the funny thing about it. He had mm-hmm. Dobbins was kind of drafted over him, and nobody likes to be hired over in the working world or in the NFL. Of course, you hate to see your team spend a second-round draft pick at the same position, but Edwards sat there and continued to perform, and Dobbins was in and out of the lineup, of course. I hope we won't lose sight of Edwards' great career. He's a player who's kind of on the margin of being a Ring of Honor player, with Kelly Gregg and with some others. And what it would, I think, would take to get him in someday is the Ravens have kind of a bad stretch. If the Ravens had a bad decade, they'd find a way to get Gus Edwards in the Ring of Honor to remember the glory years. If that never happens, Gus Edwards may never get there. But and hopefully it will never happen as Ravens fans.
Right.
Keaton Mitchell, of course, a great year in terms of DVOA. You mentioned him, the greatest ever for a running back with 40 plus carries. He had 47, barely met the standard, of course. And in all terms, he was great. The injury to him is the most serious probably since Webb in 2009 for a rookie, you know, potentially derailing his career. The Webb injury in 2009, I think, even though Webb came back and was the greatest cornerback in the NFL in 2011, I still say that and the 2012 injury derailed a Hall of Fame career.
I agree. I agree with that. Hopefully that's not the case for Keaton Mitchell, but I mean, it's very, very possible that it is.
So Derrick Henry coming to Baltimore, obviously the big news, led the NFL in carries for the past five seasons. It seems funny to talk about tread wear on some of these guys we're going to talk about today when Derrick Henry has almost 2,100 carries, I think now, 2,099 or thereabouts. He has not had a particularly high success rate the last few years, only around 46%, you know, compared to Gus, who's much higher, and the Ravens running backs in general, who are much higher. But, of course, people project Derrick Henry playing with Lamar Jackson, expect more success.
Absolutely. I saw an interesting tweet about it a while ago, basically, when the Henry deal was coming in from Ian Hartitz. Or Haritz, I forget what it is on there. He was talking about the success rate and how the Tennessee's offensive line hasn't been as good. And then you compare that to the Ravens' offensive line. And then, of course, the whole element of Lamar Jackson, you know, being a huge reason for success for running backs in Baltimore as well. You know, I think definitely the stock is higher for Henry now than it was last year for him in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's you know, maybe you kind of alluded to it in terms of Edwards. You wait for running backs to get old. Henry's older than Edwards. This is, to me, it's a kind of a scary transaction from that standpoint, is that he could get old at any point. It's not a ton of money, but it's enough money that you don't want to waste it. If it could have been spent on Jadeveon Clowney, I probably would have preferred to do that. And you could have probably had Clowney and Edwards for that same money. You would have had to dip up maybe a little deeper to sign that exacta, but it would have been not a bad one. But anyway, Henry hopefully will give the Ravens lots of things that they haven't had before. One, some really good pass blocking in addition to rushing. And the Ravens now find themselves, I think, with a need to complement Henry with gadget players, probably a speed guy for 2024, just because I don't trust Mitchell to be back.
Exactly.
And how about a one cut runner?
Yep. Yeah, I would already say that Derrick Henry is kind of a one cut runner in his style, but certainly doesn't hurt to go in that direction as well. But we definitely agree on a pass catching back, because that's not really what Derrick Henry does.
That's too bad, because he's a pass blocking back.
He is. He is.
All right. Well, that means hopefully you have some diversity of play opportunity on early downs when he's in there. It doesn't automatically flag the fact that Henry is going to catch the ball somewhere, that Henry's going to run the ball. You know, when you look at the litany of names and some guys who had some NFL success who played for the Ravens last year, you see they really never got over their veteran running back. I don't know, enamorment or whatever you might call it. Dalvin Cook, who, if you want to see a running back get old, look at what happened to Dalvin Cook and his year with the Jets. And, you know, a guy that had 5,000 yards over a four-year period with Minnesota, came to the Jets, fell flat, didn't do anything, and had a chance then to play with the Ravens, which was nice. And he seemed like a perfectly nice guy. They haven't re-signed him yet. I think they, you know, the official word from EDC, or the word, I don't know if it's the official word because he's lying about everything right now, but the word from EDC is that they're waiting to see how things shake out.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well.
Any chance he's back?
You know, I think there's a shot, but probably not great. How do you feel?
Low. Yeah, I don't think they want another veteran back. But you never know, because injuries occur, and Cook might be a guy they go to. You know, he did have one nice run for the Ravens, and he had a bunch of runs where he got stuffed. Of course, the stuffs were occurring at a time in the game when everybody knew the run was coming. He's in there to close out a game, and that's not a good time to pile up good rushing statistics. So, you know, I forgive a portion of it. On the other hand, I thought he was done with the Jets. So I wasn't real happy with the acquisition to start with. Didn't think it would take the Ravens anywhere.
I completely agree. Honestly, my perspective about this running back room, even prior to Derrick Henry, was to attack it in the draft and maybe add another UDFA. They could, of course, not even use a pick and just go the UDFA route, especially now that they have Derrick Henry. But I think getting rid of Edwards, most likely getting rid of Dobbins, and Keaton Mitchell being on the shelf for most of this upcoming year, I mean, tells you, hey, we need some youth. This running back room needs bodies and fresh ones at that. So that's the direction I would go.
That's a good play out of Justice Hill as a receiver, yep, as a pass blocker, as a runner. I'm not discounting what he can do for this team. So I'm happy they have him for a second mm-hmm. year. So it turns out, it was a mid-range signing, which is not usually a good idea with a running back, but it looks like that's really worked out for the Ravens. They certainly got value in his first year, very valuable special teams player in addition. He may have some incremental value. They seem to have their solution in place now as a return man with the new rules.
I absolutely agree with that. Of course, we are, having this conversation today after the Ravens have signed Deontay Hardy, who is pretty much a return specialist. So that is a good thing that the Ravens may not have to rely on Justice Hill to be a returner, but I do like his special teams value in that way, as well as what he does as a gunner.
Don't know if you caught it during the Liars luncheon, but it's one time where EDC almost gave something away. And he gave away the fact that he had given something away by addressing the thing, by saying what he did. And if he just continued on with the sentence, he'd have been fine. But he was asked about a return man and, trying to replace Devin Duvernay and the his response and the new kickoff rule specifically he was right. asking about. And he said, I think we'll be going to be fine on ... by September.
Right.
So he knew already that the Hardy signing was in the works, obviously. And he didn't want to say on draft day because that would mean he'd salted before the draft and he kind of made a boo-boo. But anyway, it was one of those things, knowing, in retrospect now it's clear what he said. And now the next time he makes a comment like that, we're going to be on top of it. So that was just an interesting comment. Kenyon Drake, Melvin Gordon got carries for this Ravens team. Hard to believe that Kenyon Drake got a carry for the Baltimore Ravens in 2023. Yep.
Yeah, that is crazy. Didn't expect that to happen one bit. I will say the running back room was a lot stronger in 2023 than it was in 2022, and that's a good thing. And I think, people can say what they want to about the running back position and how much value it adds to a team. But you see a kind of a night and day difference between the unit that the Ravens had in 2022 and what they had in 2023 and what their record says. But, a lot more goes into it than just the running back position.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the reasons I really loved Edwards is his ability to run out the game. He's been very good at that. But even this year, when his yards per carry were down, and largely I think that was a function of short yardage because his success was not down all that much. It's down a little. But it wasn't down all that much. Was a case of running out games. The other team knows it's coming, and just nothing you can do about it. So, anyway, the other question I would have in general, I agree with you, by the way, completely on your UDFA comment. That the stylistic fit from the UDFAs is something the Ravens have really mastered, kind of like getting edge rushers cheap out of the bargain bin. And I would love for them to just continue with that if they can. Bring an extra body to camp because things happen to running backs. And you want to make sure you're covered there. Last year they did it with Keaton Mitchell, and he proved – he's already one of the great speed backs. I was mildly surprised he didn't get drafted, and then the Ravens got him a UDFA, fantastic UDFA signing. But with what happened last year with Mitchell and also with Achan in Miami, with Mostert in Miami, with Miami's offense largely being around speed and them being two of the really successful offenses in the league, do you think speed will be even more emphasized than normal in this draft?
I do, especially when you're talking about the running back position. Explosive plays are at a premium And if you looked at the explosive play metrics from last season, the Ravens and the Dolphins and a couple other teams, probably the 49ers, were at the top of the league like all year. And a lot of those explosive plays for Baltimore were in the running game. And the same can be said for Miami. So I think more and more teams are going to kind of catch on to the speed element being important for running backs, because that variance that you have in a running back, you know, it can be negative or positive, but in the case of, you know, these speed backs, you're going to get some really explosive plays, even if you end up with a number of, you know, small to no gain plays.
It's interesting. This class of backs has a wide variation in speed. Well, actually, I'm not even sure it's that wide a variation in speed, but you've got about a 0.2 to 0.25 second difference between the entire range of guys I considered for the top 10 in terms of speed. And there's the explosive play difference is enormous in that quarter second. You wouldn't think so, but it really is. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in terms of what that generates as we go through this. All right, let's get right down to it. You started us off at number 10. You know how we do this, 10, 10, 9, 9, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. So my number 10 guy is going to be Braylon Allen, the running back out of Wisconsin. He is funny enough that the Ravens signed Derrick Henry, because the guy that I would most comp Braylon Allen to, now it's not a one for one at all. It's like a miniature or junior version of a poor man's Derrick Henry. That's what I would call Braylon Allen. You know, he's kind of a short yardage back. It's weird because in some games he doesn't really display long speed, and I think that does show up in his 40-yard dash. But he does put out a number of explosive plays for that size, and he's also one of the younger backs in the class. Yeah. I believe he's only like 20 years old right now, which is wild. Yeah, he has strong power, strong leg drive. He's kind of more of that one cut back. And I would say for a lot of the guys that I'm going to have in my top 10 list, their hands are important to me. And I thought that his were, you know, perfectly fine, very adequate hands as a receiver out of the backfield, which is something that you like to see. Yeah. Another thing, just something that stood out to me as I'm making the Derrick Henry comparison. I thought his best runs were out of Wildcat, like a direct snap to him.
Yeah,
he had some of those. Derrick Henry had at least one of those against the Ravens recently, where it was a long run, maybe a touchdown, if I remember correctly. He does a good job looking for the hole. I think he's kind of an in-between patient back, where, you know, sometimes he will, you know, wait back there, and then other times he's just trying to go straight, like he's going to run into a wall. So I think he could improve in that aspect, but his vision is not terrible. It's very fine. The thing that I don't like about him, and this is going to be a negative, is his pass blocking. I did not really enjoy his pass blocking, but he has the frame to become a much better one. So I think that's a little bit of a projection, and you get him in a room with Derrick Henry, who is a good pass blocker. The Ravens running back coaches and all of that, I think that he will improve in that way.
That's a really good point. It's definitely one of the things I dinged him for was he's been a consistently awful pass blocker at the college level. So that's something I do see a lot of backs, and Melvin Gordon was one. You look at his career, it was a ski slope downward. That's a ski slope. It implies that it goes down, but he started high and again, he went low in terms of being a pretty good pass blocker when he started out and being terrible by the end of his career. Braylon Allen, a mix of positives and negatives. And I'm going to kind of give you kind of a eyesight into this, or some sight into how I would weight these things relatively as we go through this. But the turn 20 in January, which is a big double or triple plus for me, and it's because of what you alluded to in the pass blocking. He's so young, you can actually project improvement in some areas where some of the guys who are 24 in this draft, including a couple of guys I like, They're not guys that I would project any improvement on. So even though the second contract value for Braydon Allen, I believe, is fairly minimal because he's a running back, not because he's not good, because, you know, because he'll only be 24 when he's up for his second contract. That's, you know, he's going to be, he could be one of the hot backs at that point in terms of that. It's just the likelihood of that being the case is fairly small. Now, offsetting that as a one minus at least is the fact he's already got 600 college carries, despite the fact that he's only 20 years old. So there are tread wear concerns that may show up earlier for him. He's hands are fine as a receiver; didn't have a problem with that. But he's got only 4.6 yards per target as a receiver. That's very bad. Some of it is getting turned to go upfield is not entirely something that he's completely comfortable with. So we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. One of the cut-ups I watched. Big thing for running backs, missed tackles forced and yards after contact per attempt. His numbers are okay in those power profile characteristics, but they're not great. 3.77 yards after contact per attempt was in the top third or so of running backs in the 2024 draft class, who met a certain minimum carry threshold, and it was 20% of the maximum number of carries of people that anybody had this year. So I was trying to kind of cut it down, and it ended up being about 75 backs who were in the group, and he was about 24th, I think, in terms of yards after contact per attempt, was in that range. Missed tackles forced at 0.27 per play. That's okay. It's not great, and there are definitely some better guys in terms of the top 10. He got lots of good level two opportunities from that Wisconsin offensive line. That really helped him in terms of yards per carry statistics, and also in terms of the yards after contact opportunities he had, which I kind of thought he did a little less with. So I probably got about a one minus figured in for him there. What else we got? I watched the cut-up versus Iowa. It definitely was not his best game. It was versus a tough defense. It's a good cut-up to watch. You don't want to watch him play, you know, Austin Peay or some other team where Wisconsin is completely overmatching them, and particularly in the offensive line, they're just wearing them down. Showed a good stiff arm, had another pure power missed tackle force on a shovel pass. Kind of got a few shovel passes this year, which is interesting, and it's just really an extension of the run game. He didn't break either of these, but both of them were, you know, a few yards gained. Does not seem to have a big cutback range, and that was something I didn't like about him, that he takes – one step back only, but he's not really a stick the foot in the red ground or a jump cut guy like Corum or somebody like that, whose right. lateral movement is really the biggest thing they bring to the table. Did have a really nice missed tackle force where he just ran over the safety, Quinn Schulte of Iowa, that looked pretty good. He ran through a leg tackle in level three. This is the kind of thing I expect him to be very good breaking or forcing missed tackles in level two and level three, given his size. That's definitely one of the big things. Almost runs between the tackles most of the time. And unfortunately finished that game with a fumble on fourth and one.
Yep.
I didn't see how many fumbles he had for the year. I didn't record it here anyway. But I didn't dig into that anyway. The comp I would have for Braydon Allen is more like Edwards, and Edwards being a great back in Baltimore, you know, that's a big compliment for me,
but right.
Similar size player at 6'1", 238. Edwards had a little less speed, but Edwards was the yards after contact master. At a much higher level in his pro time with the Ravens. If you look back to Rutgers, Edwards at Miami and Rutgers combined had 0.20 missed tackles forced per carry. So, you know, a fourth lower than what Braydon Edwards had at Wisconsin, and also only 3.5 yards after contact per attempt. So Edwards was better. And I think a lot of that is the Wisconsin line getting him better opportunities than the Rutgers and Miami line we're getting there for that. So I like Allen. I have him at number six overall, I think. Definitely a mix of pluses and minuses, but the age plays way into it. I'm in agreement with you that I think he'll improve as a pass blocker at the NFL level just based on that alone.
Absolutely. I don't mean to ding the guy again, but did you happen to watch the Ohio State 2023 game?
No, I didn't watch that.
Yes, so he fumbled twice in that game as well.
That's a good game not to watch as a cut up, in my opinion. It's I want to watch a mediocre game for him or a game against a tough defense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to watch just a game where he was either the worst game of the year or the best game of the year. It doesn't do me any good. And one of the guys in this draft, that's all, that's what I had, was a game where he, you know, rushed 30 times for 243 yards. And I'm, yeah, I bet I'm going to see a lot of his weaknesses in this one.
Yeah. all right. Who was your number 10 guy? If you're okay, ready,
my number 10 guy is Isaac Garendo of Louisville. And you know, he's a little bit of an interesting cat because he's older. And, you know, I didn't really want to put old guys on. That's part of my thing. So we got a 4-year age difference between my number 6 and number 10 guy here. But 6'0", 221, 4'33", 40, which I believe might be the fastest of the running backs this year. It's not as close.
Right.
In terms of the guys. Very impressive jumps. He's one of the best athletes in the group. He has good size, of course, but he's been a terrible pass blocker. And he was only used as a pass blocker on 11% of plays in 2023. So they don't really trust him in that regard to pick up blitzes and some of the things you'd expect running backs to do. By the way, as far as I understand it, when you chip block, PFF does not count it as a pass block, so it does not get recorded as such. So that 11% is set blocks, as I would term them in my offensive line scoring that you might listen to.
Okay.
Bounce outside guy all the way. So we've had guys like this. Kenneth Dixon kind of had a similar running style, as he always wanted to bounce the ball outside. Collins, big bounce outside to the outside guy. I noticed watching Leofau for Notre Dame that Garendo was in the game. That's the first kind of time I really spent any time looking at him. And he kept outrunning Leofau to the outside. So it was working in that game. Leofau, kind of a slow-footed middle linebacker. Nonetheless, is very draftable. He's near the top of my board among the inside linebackers. He was fast enough to do so in that game. I think he's going to need to learn to stick his foot in the ground and make some better cuts at the NFL level. He's got 5 years of college experience, 4 at Wisconsin, 1 at Louisville, and yet he only had 231 college carries. So the guy 4 years younger has 600 college carries. He's got 231. Some of that's, you know, not getting time at the position, and honestly, that some of that plays really well for Garendo. If you're worried about a second contract, just don't worry about it. This guy's a one contract player. And honestly, where the Ravens would draft him, which would probably be in value range for me, I'd be about round 5 for him, mm-hmm. for Garendo. Mm-hmm. Don't even worry about a second contract. Get one good contract out of this running back. Don't tie yourself up with thoughts or keep yourself up at night worrying about how you're going to re-sign the guy. He's worth it for 4 years.
Yep.
Missed tackles forced, as I saw it, were mostly his size and speed. So you can get this tackles a lot of ways. You can get him by elusiveness. You can get him by speed. You can get him by size. There's other reasons too, but at least those three, his are all mostly size and speed. So he does occasionally run over a defender, but a lot of it's speed. He's one of the most accomplished receiving threats in the back. Now, this is a big deal. 1.7 yards per route run and 9.8 yards per target, which is an incredible rate for a running back to maintain. And he had a reasonable number of total receptions, but I did not write that down, which is bad. I think he'd be a highly complimentary player for Lamar and Henry. The only thing is his age that's really bothering me. It probably should bother me less.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I liked him a lot. I had him higher than you simply because of those athletic tools. So one of the main themes that I'm going to have in this ranking are, you know, in the same mold as Keaton Mitchell, these guys that are athletic freaks that can create a short run into a touchdown, essentially. And this guy is near the top of the class in that particular aspect. He does have the negatives like you're talking about. He's an older prospect. He, for whatever reason, wasn't the starter at Louisville. I don't know if you're going to have Jawar Jordan in your top 10. I do not.
Right.
Okay. So that was an interesting thing to me when I was watching his tapes, that, you know, he wasn't in at the start of the game. He was kind of intermingled, but you could just find explosive play after explosive play on his tape in, you know, multiple games. So I was really impressed with his speed. Obviously, he has that nice size. He kind of has a little bit of an upright running style, which is not the best thing. But, you know, I think, you know, he can work on that at the next level. And like you mentioned, his receiving chops are pretty good as well. So for me, he was number 6.
Number 6. So we had this has happened several times, by the way. Yeah, 10 and 6 or switch.
Swapped. Yeah.
One more thing I want to say about Grando that I didn't mention early is his 4.11 yards after contact per attempt are outstanding. His 0.24 missed tackles forced per attempt really should be higher given his size and speed. I would say he's more of a straight line back than an elusive guy. So that's part of it. He's not reading leverage and trying to make a guy miss. He's consistently trying to beat people to the outside. So that will tend to leave you with less total missed tackles forced, that kind of side. Because if you do outrun the guy to the outside, it's not going to be a missed tackle forced.
Right.
And if you don't, you know, you're probably not going to get him to miss the tackle.
Yeah, he's definitely a little bit stiff and linear, but he has so much of that athleticism packed into him that it doesn't really matter.
Okay. Almost no difference between my number six guy, where I'd like him drafted, and my number 10 guy. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a very close rating here. Let's move on. Talk about your number nine guy.
My number nine guy probably is higher for you. Blake Corum out of Michigan. So I liked him a good bit, you know, a ton of experience at Michigan. Honestly, if it weren't for the injury, probably could have come out last year in that draft. But, you know, he went back to school, was able to help Michigan win a national title, which is huge for them. And, he was a good player once again. So his jump cut style is really nice. I think he has very good vision in this class.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Working hard is worth it if you're seeing results. And when it comes to working out, the same thing is true. You want the maximum benefit in the time you have, and that's exactly what Tonal is built for. And with their latest iteration, Tonal 2, you can ensure your workout is more tailored and effective than ever. Tonal's at-home strength training system uses adaptive weight to learn from your movement and set the optimal weight for every move, adjusting in 1-pound increments up to 250 pounds, challenging even the most advanced users to push their limits. You can also experience a full body burn with the new Aero HIIT workouts, the perfect blend of heart-pumping cardio and strength. Plus, the new built-in Smart View leverages a high-resolution camera that lets you see yourself during your workout, analyzes your movement, and provides real-time coaching, just like a personal trainer. Right now, Tonal is offering our listeners $200 off your Tonal purchase with promo code 200TONAL. That's Tonal.com, and use promo code 200TONAL for $200 off your purchase. That's Tonal.com. Promo code 200TONAL for $200 off.
As like I mentioned before, the hands are solid. So most of the guys on my list, I think all of them have at least adequate hands for a running back. So he definitely fits that for me as well. I say that he's ideally a north-south running back. I don't really view him as a goal line player, meaning he's not the push the pile type running back. He has that low center of gravity, but he's not necessarily the strongest in that sort of, you know, Gus Edwards, Derrick Henry mold. What else do we want to mention? You know, he did make Jack Campbell, the linebacker famously drafted by the Detroit Lions last year. He made him look silly a couple times against Iowa in 2022. And I think he's a really good second effort guy. But, you know, I noticed a couple fumbles on tape. He has a number of mediocre games. There will be several times in a game where he's getting 2 yards, 2 yards, 2 yards, or 3 yards, and then he'll break a decently long run. But yeah, I just thought he was a pretty good player, but not going to be my top guy.
Okay, I thought I was downgrading Corum to put him down as far as I did, but I had him at number five. But I agree, there's a lot not to like about this guy. And it's, I mean, I go through some of the negatives in first, because I would see dropping him here from where I did. He's 24 in November. Let's start with that. He's 5'8", 205, runs a 4.53. None of that is going to give you confidence that he's going to be forcing a lot of other people to miss tackles or that he's going to be able to run away from a defense the way he did in college. Obviously, working with a great offensive line and a whole bunch of draftable guys have been, you know, at Michigan the last few years. But certainly he's right there in terms of having one of the best situations along with, you know, the Wisconsin backs and whatnot. But he's had a great offensive line to work with. Great lateral movement, shows up in the three coming the shuttle. So that's at least verified by that. 733 college touches. That's a lot, and a tread wear concern, in particular for a smaller back. So if he were 6'0", 230, I'd worry less about it, or 6'0", 210, even I'd worry less about it. But at 5'0", 205, I'd be more concerned. It obviously does have a minor injury history. Been a scoring machine in college. His yards per carry has declined each of the last two seasons. That's not unusual for a decline from a record high level, but he is playing behind that great Michigan offensive line that won a national championship last year with a damn good, you know, RPO quarterback who should be supporting his play in McCarthy. And did not really, explode for a huge year other than the touchdowns. The touchdowns were a terrific number, mm-hmm. but 4.8 yards per carry was significantly down there. A lot of carries, a lot of running backs in college football with better yards per carry than that. Really unspectacular as a receiver, in my view. And here's the problem is the overall 6.2 yards per target. Got not an insignificant number of career targets at 67. ADOT's minus 0.01. So you're looking at a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage mm-hmm. and a lot of red yards in his total of his in his yak number, I should say. Five career fumbles in 676 attempts is too many. His yards per carry, part of the reason that's low is poor contact numbers. His 2.42 yards after contact per attempt was very low among the running back draft class, and 0.12 missed tackles forced per attempt. He's a guy who goes down to the first hit a lot. So if he can avoid that hit entirely with his lateral jump cut style and, you know, his acrobatic whiz would be great. But a lot of times not avoiding that, he's getting hit and he's getting taken down. Kind of looks like Ray Rice in terms of his size, ability to go sometimes even down to one arm and tripod it to avoid a tackle, but that has not translated into yards after contact anyway. Complete non-factor as a pass blocker. He might be able to learn how to chip effectively at some point, but he's not a guy you could depend on to pick up a blitz. Justice Hill is a smaller back who has done that well at the NFL level. You know, you talk about Derrick Henry being a mentor. Justice Hill maybe could get Blake Corum going. I watched the Maryland game. I mentioned a guy who I watched a great game of his cut up. He did have 5 MTFs in that game, which is high for him. 30 carries for 243 yards with 2 touchdowns. So there's most of the things. I mean, it's just not a balanced, you know, look at a player here, which is one of the problems. Did have really effective change of speed in addition to the change of direction skills. I thought he benefited tremendously from the level 2 opportunities. The Michigan offensive line got him in the game. 4th-and-1 play, the announcers were praising him for breaking it for a 30-plus yard TD. And it basically, I'm going to not overdo this and say that 14 of the 22 players immediately jammed into the middle of the field where there's nowhere for Corum to run. And he ran it instead. He reversed and went off tackle. And the guy who made a great block at wide receiver did not get credited at all on the play, but he was the guy who really honestly made the play, made the play from a 3 or 5 yard gain into a 30. So that was a good one. You saw him in that game whiff on a pass block to allow a sack that ended a drive. He did follow that up with a pretty nice pickup on the right side as a pass blocker, where there was a blitzing. I don't remember if it was a blitzing slot or a blitzing linebacker, but he picked him up effectively. So, there was not really the mix of up and down I would have liked to see from a player in that cut up. But he is a guy, I guess he fits between Henry's power and Mitchell's speed. I think he is who he is at age 24, in this November. I don't think there's a big thing, and I think he's absolutely a one-contract player. I don't mind that, by the way, at running back. There's only a couple guys that I'd really even concern myself and some of the top guys on the board maybe. I have him at number 5, and reflecting on this, I think he is – I think I still would have him ahead of Breland Allen, who I had at 6. And I'm looking at the rest of the guys. Everybody has warts of some sort, so – Corum is a guy who, he definitely brings you some positive things in terms of lateral mobility, and hopefully that would be a complementary style if he were to be drafted by the Ravens. I put about a 4th-round value on him.
Sure. I think I agree with that completely. We ranked them a little bit differently, but I saw the same things you were talking about. Where I did mention his hands not being bad in my notes, especially in the Iowa-Michigan 2022 game, I mentioned – he catches the ball well out of the backfield, but needs a very solid blocking to make a great play after the catch. And you see that, as you mentioned, in his yards per target numbers, because he goes down pretty often on first contact or second contact right there after. And I had the same kind of note in his Michigan-Penn State 2023 game, where I was talking about his second effort consistently being good, but he can be brought down with relative ease. So, the same kind of thing, something that you don't really want for a running back. His profile is not your burner. He's not going to be a Keaton Mitchell speed back. And he's also not really this physical thumping, I'm going to run you over back. So he kind of falls in this no man's land.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be interesting. What the thing we're mentioning about a receiver in particular, if you ever watch 7-on-7 drills, they hold the linebackers back in terms of their downhill, thump on the running back when the ball's dumped off. They actually tell them hold off a second, then go kind of thing. In actual NFL games, that's where you get these big downhill plays that we associate with a lot of the Ravens linebackers, with Kyle Hamilton, with others. And you don't have time to get reset and go upfield. That's one of the things about Corum that I kind of didn't like, was he took a little bit of time to get reset, review the field. And they go with having a lateral style is you're not immediately trying to make a blind move, either a curl move, which you'll see from a wide receiver sometime, a curl back and then turn, because you've got to get a guy to chase you, or some other move where he would immediately go north just to try and get the maximum number of yards he could. He's more of like he really wants to see it, and that really needing to see it is kind of holding him up as a receiver after the catch.
Agreed. All right. Would you like to go to your number 9 guy?
My number 9 guy is Tyrone Tracy. And I had a little bit of in and out on this guy trying to decide if he belonged in the group, but I eventually dropped some guys that I know a lot of other people really love. Let me go down my list on Tyrone Tracy, because I have, fairly lower, much lower round grade on this guy. But he's 5'11", 209, 448, good jumps. He'll be 25 in November. So you're talking one contract only at this point. Converted from wide receiver to running back in 2023. That's the big characteristic of Tyrone Tracy. And, I thought a very good job with that conversion in a single year. Now, of course, he's a grown man playing college football still, and he's only had 148 college carries, but he did also have 112 receptions in 6 college seasons. So DaCosta has mentioned that the NIL money and COVID and other things have held people back for more seasons. And this one guy with 7 years of college experience currently in the game. Treadwears, I don't think, is the issue for him, despite the age. His post-contact numbers are outstanding at 0.40 missed tackles forced per attempt and 4.44 yards after contact per attempt. Those are huge factors, guys, by the way. I mean, it's how you separate the backs who could do some things on their own and what they could and project them into a scheme like at the Ravens, where they're going to get some good second level opportunities to see, you know, how can they make more than what they're given out of a play. Just 5.5 yards per target as a receiver, which I thought was absolutely hilarious and ironic. It comes to his last year. He's a running back after being a wide receiver all this time. And his receiving stats actually been decent at times. He had 8.9 yards per target in 2019 as a receiver at Iowa. But when he finished up at Purdue, he's just 5.5 as a running back. He had two career pass blocking snaps in his first five college seasons. And this is another way. I'm just incredible that he would, you know, come to the position and be this able to adapt to it. It blocked on 28% of the snaps in 2023. And I thought he was pretty darn good after a very rough four-game stretch to start the season. So the fact that they asked him to block 28% of the times means they trusted him to pick guys up. But at 5'11", 209, it's not obvious that he'd be great at that. He's in that kind of a mid-range size for a running back. So he certainly isn't doing it solely on size. Great gadget option. I think a guy who kind of understands some of the receiving components of the game. He could probably run different routes for you that other running backs aren't used to running. Not necessarily can't run, but aren't used to running. Probably is going to use his hands better in that way. I'm not expecting any significant growth on a player. Otherwise, you know, he's the kind of player I would think I trust Monken and Jackson to use him and enhance the value that he has normally and that he should in college.
Yeah. I'd love to say, you know, something about the player, but he's one of the guys I haven't been able to watch yet. So my goal, like I've told you before, is to watch all of the draft eligible running backs before the draft, which means I have a lot of work left to do, but Tyrone Tracy was not on the available list of players when I was going through and watching the tape that is at my disposal.
You know, that it happens to me a lot more than often happens to you that you're in this position, but Crawford had some offensive lineman who played well in 2022 and terribly in 2023, wasn't on my draft radar at all, but this always seems to happen. And I, you know, all I could do is go back and ask a couple of questions to him about, well, what do you see, and bring up like what PFF says about him or what PFF has about him in terms of numbers in the case of this guy. But it happens to be a lot. So appreciate it. And the fact that we're looking at different players is always good.
Yeah. And he is a guy that I've heard about and I need to watch for sure. But that's interesting. Everything that you said, it kind of gives me an idea going into watching him. Although, like Michael Crawford says, you know, kind of a blank slate is a good thing too, so you don't have a formed opinion one way or another before you start. So,
all right, let's hear your number eight back.
My number eight back is Audric Estime out of Notre Dame. He is another big back. So I think I watched him and Braylon Allen in the same, you know, couple days. And they are similar players. But, you know, have enough differences that, you know, are interesting. So I felt like Estime was another guy that had good leg drive. He can be a short yardage back. He kind of remind me of like an A.J. Dillon-esque player. That hasn't really been the best running back for the Packers, but that doesn't mean, you know, that that's going to be his NFL career. I'm just saying, size-wise, kind of what he does reminds me a little bit of A.J. Dillon. He's a good one-cut-and-go type running back with some, you know, jump cuts on tape as well. You know, similar to Blake Corum, he does have a number of small gains in different games, which is not great, but he also shows explosive plays like he did against NC State this year. Most people know NC State has a linebacker, Peyton Wilson, that is, you know, talked about near the top of the linebacker. So, you know, he went against Peyton Wilson in that NC State defense, which is a pretty good unit. And he had an 80-yard touchdown run, just untouched. So he has some juice. Didn't test well, I don't think. I'm pretty sure he had not great measurables, especially in the 40-yard dash. But His jumps were solid, so he has some explosiveness in his testing. He's a downhill guy. He looks good in a zone scheme, which I think when you're talking about these running backs, you want to kind of compare what this guy could do in the Raven system. And with them leaning more into the zone, I was looking for guys that did some of that, and I feel like he'd be a good fit in that way. Let's see what else. His hands are good. Hands out of the backfield were very solid. A number of touchdowns on tape, explosive plays. Trying to think. His pass pro wasn't great, but most of these college backs don't have fantastic pass pro. So.
Or they're at different spots, but I would agree. It's a kind of a disappointing component of what he did. I've got a lot to say about Estime here. Also my number 8 guy, by the way. So the age is a terrific factor. Being 21 is good. It's not good to run a 471 at 21. Mm-hmm. Now, right. I don't want to too much stock in that number, because when you look at the guy on film, he definitely has positive north and south characteristics that are good. Definitely has a really good power profile. 0.31 missed tackles force per attempt and 4.27 Yakko per attempt, which is fifth best in the class, by the way. So it's one of the real good players in that. The receiving is the big thing for Estime. And, you know, we watch a fair amount of Notre Dame because that's where Maureen went to school, and she kind of squeals at the time as we're going through this. But Estime had 10.7 yards per target in his career, which is there aren't that many receivers who have that good a thing. And how did he get there? He caught every single ball that was thrown to him in his college career. I think it was like 26 out of 26 or 29 out of 29, but it's in that range, including 3 contested catches. So it wasn't all freebies behind the line of scrimmage and purely accurate throws from Hartman and whatnot. Hartman is kind of growing on me a little bit. I've always kind of thought he was just a guy in terms of the quarterback, and he was outside the top 10. And I heard in one of the cut up of Estime, they're talking about how Hartman is the best deep ball throw. And I'm like, no, he's not. That's ridiculous. but anyway, there's that. His ADOT career is -0.6. So it's a lot of dump off and outlet passes that he's taking up the field there. But he does a good job. He gets the ball turned upfield and he gets yardage. And Notre Dame, no doubt, did some good things to block for him. And they are traditionally a very well coached screen team, so that's would be no doubt helping him in this. But his catches are basically an extension of the run game. Watch the cut up of the USC game where he went 22 for 95, 2 touchdowns, and only had 3 missed tackles forced. So that's a good one to look at in terms of what's not going right in terms of him breaking contact. Now, part of that also made it difficult was that Notre Dame won that game 48-20 going away. So he's in there at the end of the game running it out when USC knows the run is coming. And so he didn't really have as great opportunities in that, but still a good game for him. Lowered his shoulder directly into the DB, preferred running style for him. Displayed a hesitation move in space that I really liked. I didn't know it in terms of a misdirection component, but when I see a hesitation move like that, that's a guy who's actually trying to read the opponent's leverage as opposed to just making a cut or a sudden move and kind of playing his own cards in that respect. But you have to have some of that as a running back. You can't get away from being a guy. You can't be a pure speed guy and be really effective, I don't think. You have to have some of what Lamar has. But, you know, he has, you know, 150 millilamars, let's call it, of elusiveness there that we could see in there. So it might be 15% of the leverage reader that Lamar is. What else did I see? Had some nice pass block pickups in that game. Picked up the slot corner. Another thing you notice is kind of a Jamal Lewis, very short and choppy steps when he's running in traffic, and tries to finish the run, which I think is good, and it probably adds to his Yakko number. Almost certain it does. He has some sidecar mesh experience with Hartman, so that's a guy who, and Hartman not a big runner or anything, but definitely he's running out of sidecar, taking the mesh. I think, you know, the Ravens are probably going to run out of sidecar a lot. It'd be interesting to see with Henry, and if they got another back like Estime, who has a lot of overlap with Derrick Henry, would they want to go back to more pistol? Do you think that's might be in the future?
Yeah, very possibly. One of the guys we talked about earlier, Isaac Guerrero, you know, is another guy that has experience with a running back in the I formation, as well as playing out of the pistol with their quarterback. So just things that you see when you're watching these running backs and how they could fit with the Ravens, it made me think of it with him as well as Estime. You know, the pistol is something that I don't see why the Ravens wouldn't bring it back to at least some effect.
Definitely was something Edwards was very effective with, what Ingram was very effective with in that 2019 season. All right. I think that covers Estime for both of us then. So that covers both of our number eight players. Let's move on to your number seven.
One second before we get to seven, I just wanted to let you know, you probably have seen this. Audric Estime ran another 40 at the Notre Dame Pro Day, and it was a reported 4.58. So you can say maybe it was a 4.62, and that's definitely better than a 4.72 or whatever it was.
That's great to hear. That really is great to hear. That'll improve his draft stock. I don't know that I move him up the board on what I have here. I kind of like the next guy, but everybody at this point still for a couple all the way through quorum, everybody's got some warts. So you're number seven. Okay.
My number seven guy is Will Shipley out of Clemson. I really like him as a receiver. He is very explosive. A catch and run type guy, a little bit of a pitter patter style, but he's solid in space. You know, he is going to chunk out multiple what is considered explosive gains in a game. You know, anything over 10 yards, anything over 15 yards, he will get you a few of those a game, which is really nice. So a good route runner, probably one of the better ones in the class. I also liked him as a pure runner. At first watching him, I thought maybe this guy is just third down back, but the more I saw him, the more I liked. So I thought he was an explosive player from multiple levels. He does a good job of, once he's in the second level, weaving through defenders, making guys miss. I'm not sure what his numbers are on that, but I'm very positive that you would have that. And he has good contact balance as well. Well, what else we got here? I wouldn't categorize him as a burner, but the amount of big plays that he does have, you know, leads you to believe that he has enough juice at the next level, certainly. He did fumble against Wake Forest this year, but I didn't notice too many on the games that I did watch of his for it to be a concern.
It's a concern for me. He's got eight career fumbles. I think that's one of the things that will kind of weigh against him in the rankings.
Okay. I hear you. Do you know how those were split up over his career?
There were more in the past. I'll look it up while you're finishing your comments on him.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he's a player that would fit into the Ravens' backfield as a complementary piece. Right now, what you have with Justice Hill and Derrick Henry and an injured Keaton Mitchell is a diverse group, and I think you add in a guy like Will Shipley, you seriously get some receiving chops, and I think Justice Hill has some of that to his game. Maybe Shipley is more polished coming out of college. And, you know, another player that has enough juice to create explosive plays for the offense. And anytime that you can do that and add some variance to the group, add a complimentary piece to what Derrick Henry will bring, I think that's smart.
I liked him also exactly at number seven. So we've got two matches in a row here on this. 4.39 at his pro day. So again, jaundiced eye, we look at that. But 6.81 three cone is really nice. So you get a little bit of bounce out of a player like him. He's got some negatives that go with him. Oh, by the way, his jumps and his three cone is all exceptional. Obviously, his 40 is. He's got 611 college touches. So that's meaningful tread wear for a three-season player. He'll be 22 in August. So he's not an old guy, but he's got a fair amount of tread wear. His post-contact stats were not good. 0.16 missed tackles forced per attempt is low, and 2.92 yards after contact per attempt might have been the second lowest quorum among the guys that I had ranked. So he's not good in that category. He was an effective kick returner for Clemson, so it was a extra little layer of value there if the Ravens ever wanted to go that way. Maybe didn't want to activate a kick return guy for a game or. My guess is they're going to be very comfortable with who Deontay Hardy is because he's been good at the NFL level, and I think they effectively assigned a game day activation to him for all right. 17 games. Shipley, I would agree there's some things to like him out as a receiver, but it's a lot of negative plays with a lot of red yards. 5.6 yards per target only, so it's not really exceptional. He hasn't broken a lot of plays, and 8.6 yak per reception. So what that tells me is catching the ball behind the line of scrimmage a lot, and he's eating up red yards, eating up his yak with red yards. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. So catching it for -5 and getting a 3 yard gain on that play, for example. Another one cut option, and I think you kind of alluded to this as well. He's in the middle between a Mitchell and a Henry, but. I look at him as a potential gadget guy as well with his kind of speed. And some of that one cut ability that I think you could use him on a variety of plays. You could line him up outside, probably line him up in the slot. If you want to play a pony backfield, he's a guy you can line up wide and try and get the football to somewhere out in space to make plays. So I liked who he was. I would not overdraft a player like this. Will Shipley absolutely is the kind of guy who needs to drop into my value range for me to want to draft him. He's not a guy that I love enough outside of just his athleticism and the age combination that makes me think, yeah, I just got to have him. So, he's a fourth or fifth round guy to me. I would probably want to get value in the fifth round for a player like Shipley. And if you look at other people's boards, there's some people who think he should go in the third round. And that's just too high for me. So.
I agree with you. Where I'm going to be with most of these running backs is day three anyways. Mm-hmm. I may believe that some of them are maybe perhaps worth a late day two pick, but you know, the Ravens, I do not foresee taking a running back on day one or day two, obviously day one, but I don't think it'll happen day two either.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're probably right on that. All right. Well, we're through seven picks here. We're deep into this, but we're going to break this up into two shows and we'll be back for part two. But before we do that, Jake, where can people find your work online?
Yep. You can find me on Twitter or X as they call it at Real Jake Vogel. Vogel is the last name. And I talk Ravens a lot. I talk Georgia football and NFL and college in general. So feel free to reach out.
A big Orioles fan as well. I'm real happy with what's happening going on in that yes. series in Boston.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I haven't been as into it as some of the big Orioles accounts, but man, it's been fun to watch, especially since they brought that dong bong back out and the sprinkler and everything.
It's been a lot of fun. We're going to the game tonight. So we're recording this on the 12th Friday and still hoping to see Jackson Holliday's first hit tonight against a really tough right-hander that the Brewers are putting out there, Peralta. But an interesting few days here. I have loved seeing Couser basically take the left field job away with that series in Fenway because ain't no doubt about it. He is going to have a hard time getting back in the lineup right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree with that.
All right. Well, other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear from you. Always looking for new people to talk football with. And it's been through this process that I get all the new good folks like Jake that want to be on a show. And then I want to have back on five more shows because they're so good. So please take the time, send me a little note. Any idea for a show is fine, but I have the recollection series to talk about one Ravens player that you're fond of from the past. If you'd like to do that. Jake, really appreciate you doing this as always. We'll talk to you next time on Film Study. We'll be right back.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.